Well, I just returned from Israel, and I thought I'd make this tape while things are fresh in my mind. It's 1993, the first Jerusalem convention of Bible students took place this April, and it was a very rewarding experience and a very thrilling experience in a way to meet the various brethren there, as well as those that lived in Israel. When we landed and finally got out into our buses and started heading for Jerusalem, it was amazing the changes that were visible to the eye. Some years ago, well, it was 6 years ago when I was there last, and the airport was like one big warehouse. And today it's a beautiful airport with a beautiful drive leaving the airport on both sides. The small palm trees were planted in a beautiful row. It was really lovely. And as we proceeded, we noticed that so many of the hills going to Jerusalem were now filled with many, many buildings that they have put up for the Russian immigrants, not only around Jerusalem, but in Ashkelon and every area where we went on the hills. They had all these little villages that were rather new and with very nice houses. And as you approach the city of Jerusalem, it's interesting to notice that all of the buildings are of one color. They're all like a cream color. And I understood, learned while there, that this was a requirement in Jerusalem. You just couldn't put up any house and paint it any color. It had to be this color, and it really looked very neat. And when the sun shone on Jerusalem, it looked like the city of gold, and probably this is why they call it the city of gold. It's really a lovely sight when you can see all of the various hills, especially at night when all the lights are on. It really is very nice. We had a good trip, and we, of course, traveling with a crowd, you know that there are going to be a few problems, a few obstacles, but nothing that couldn't be solved. And so there we were in Jerusalem. We got into our rooms, and make a long story short, the first thing that we did in connection with the convention was to have a service at the Garden Tomb. This Garden Tomb was for us exclusively. Nobody else was allowed to enter at those hours. It was in the morning, and it was really a beautiful experience. The man in charge gave us a little dissertation. I wish I could have recorded it, but he had many good things to say. And then we had two discourses that really were very impressive. And, of course, there was some hymn sing. And then the brethren were able to file through the tomb itself. We couldn't linger in there too long because there were so many of us. 300 brethren takes a while before they get through, and of course we had to leave the premises within a short period of time. But it was a lovely experience, and as we walked around to the other side, we could see Golgotha very clearly, and we could still see why it's called the skull, because it does look like a skull. You've probably all seen pictures of it. And that was a very nice experience. And then there were so many things that happened during the convention. It was very enjoyable. We met so many brethren from England, from France, from Poland, and various other countries that made the trip, and we all met there. And there were some, of course, that needed translating, so they had translators in the back so that the brethren could understand what was going on. I'm going to go into the talks, because those that are interested could probably borrow one of the books, and I just wanted to say that the discourses were excellent, and most of them were along prophetical lines that would, of course, include Israel and the prophecies concerning Israel. And that was very encouraging, I'm sure, for many. He left Israel. All of the relatives had to give permission for her to leave. And January of 99, during the Gulf War, she saw the Studs coming. They came, to Israel because they were deprived of so much of all activity for three generations. They were so completely curtailed. She didn't even know that she was a Jew. And she said the world opinion helped in those difficult days. And in 1989, the gates seemed to open. And it was very difficult to get there, but they were helped by other Jews. And she said things were better now, that 20% have no work, 35% are working on jobs they know, which implies that the rest were working on jobs that were just little fiddly things. The ones that do come are those that are highly motivated. And she said now she knows what it means to live in your own land and a free city. And so it was very nice to hear her little short report. And then there was an ambassador, Moshe Sasha. He was born in 1925. He knew four languages, and he's been involved with the peace process. He was also ambassador to Rome and to Cairo, Egypt. He mentioned that Israel was given a mission to free all Jews to come. And then he gave some statistics, like 650 started. They had 83 different languages. A half million from Russia, 30,000 from Ethiopia, 50,000 are engineers, and here they have to employ them all. He says for every group of Russians that came, they had enough talent to have a full symphony orchestra. And the doctors, they all have to meet the Israeli standards, which of course is understandable. Of course, they suffered from the concentration camps and were so happy to be able to survive. Those that did survive, of course, are very grateful. When the new immigrants come, sometimes they come with different concepts regarding woman's place, and others will come if these can be established. And so they're constantly getting ready for new immigrants to come. He says they aspire to learn more of the Bible, and I think that was very true. We found that true among the people. We only traveled a little bit with the group the first week of the convention for 3 or 4 days, and there were a couple of days where we were able to look around and see some of the sites. But after that, Mitchell and Becky had rented a minivan, and we were able to travel around on our own and visit the brethren that we were interested in visiting. And so that meant that we had access to other kinds of people, the Jews that have been there for some time. And as we drove from place to place, we would pick up some of the soldiers that were going back on duty, and usually at least one of them from the group would know a little English, so we were able to have some good conversations with them to find out, you know, what their faith was and to be able to give them a message of truth. They're very open. They're very open in Israel. I know when you try it, at least when I have tried it in this country, it is not so well received. But it's just a wonderful land for them. It's a land of milk and honey. And like this one gentleman that was talking to us, he didn't necessarily promise oil and coal, but he did say it would be a land of milk and honey. and their produce is just beautiful. It's so tasty. I have never eaten a better tasting cucumber than in Israel. It seems like ours are either watered down or I don't know how they're being grown. But they have a great deal of work to do, and they're very willing to help one another. He said what they really need now is peace with their neighbors, and that's the most difficult challenge. He mentioned how that this peace would need to be a biblical peace. And he quoted Isaiah 2:4 about the man shall not learn war anymore, and the lion and lamb would feed together. Of course, their enemies would like to destroy her. Often, if the Arabs are friendly to the Jews, they often are murdered for this. And he said the Muslims are their number one enemy at this time. Then a little later on in the week, we had another visit by a rabbi, Yitzhak Rubin, and he began by quoting in Exodus 5, 2, and 3, and Exodus 3, 14, where it says, I will be. He mentioned how that God was not mentioned in the book of Esther, but I don't remember why he said that. And he talked about the coming of Messiah, the Anointed One, and he said he was taught that Messiah would be a human being and bring in the Messianic age. And he would be mortal, king of the Jews, and he would establish God's kingdom on earth. He almost sounded like a Bible student, but he didn't know exactly what he meant by that. And he said in the Messianic age, when the Messianic age would take place, there would be a prophet and the messenger of God with a message. And everybody would be under their own vine and fig tree, and the wolf and the lamb and the kid would play together, and he would sprinkle clean water. He quoted all those scriptures, that all may know him from the least to the greatest. So obviously they're reading their scriptures. And then he also mentioned that the scriptures say that my sanctuary will be in the midst. And then the kingdom promises, he mentioned about there not being no more plucked up. It's rather interesting to hear him come up with these scriptures. And he talked about the words of Amos, that all nations would flow into it, into the house of the God of Jacob. And then afterward, there was a little question period. And one question was about the yarmulke covering the head that the men wore. And he said it showed the presence of God. Then on another day, we had a Professor Kaufman, and he said he didn't want any videos or any photos taken while he was giving a talk. He was a physicist, and he evidently was very interested in the temple. He said that there were 40 papers that he published on the temple, and he mentioned how his sources were from the rabbinical writings and Josephus and others. And, of course, they speak very highly of Maimonides. I think one experience we had some years ago with a rabbi, when we were just having a discussion with him, he referred to Maimonides before he would refer to the Bible. So I think that might be one of their little hang-ups. Now, when some of the brethren asked him about the third temple, he felt that the third temple would be much like the second temple, with maybe a few things added, which of course I'm sure many would disagree with. And of course many brethren, they have difference of opinion on the temple. Some feel that it's never going to be done again or built again. Of course I happen to believe that it will, because I think that's what the last chapter of Ezekiel talks about. But we will wait and see. There are some very interesting scriptures about, in fact, just recently in reading in the reprints, I ran into this article where Brother Elsa spoke about the possibility of an earthquake or some other catastrophe that would take place at the end of the age, before the full establishment of the kingdom, and that there's water under that area where the temple had been at one time, and it's somehow blocked in. It no longer runs, but the Kidron Valley used to be had water. And Brother Elsa's thought was that when this is released, and whatever the however the Lord will overrule this, the water that will come out from under the temple, which would be at the site of the Golden Gates of Israel, as you're sitting on Mount of Olives or standing there looking down, you can see the two Golden Gates. They're sealed, but of course some feel that those gates will be open and they'll walk through it. But whatever the tradition is, we'll wait and see, because if the if there is an earthquake and the Dome of the Rock is destroyed, which it would have to be in order for it to make place for a temple, it'll be a very interesting time, I'm sure. And of course we'll wait and see, and see how the Lord arranges it. It was interesting when our guide was taking us around, and you know, we're a Bible group, so they made sure they were going to go to all of the churches, and after a while we said, no more churches, we're not really interested in churches as much as we are in other places. And it was interesting, the few places that I did go along with the group, one of the places was the upper room, and the guide would, you know, well, this is the upper room, and then he kind of said on the side, it's either this one or one like it. So, you know, you can't really be sure that some of these places are exactly what it was. Of course, there was nothing in it, so it was just one big room with some pillars, you know, here and there. So it was interesting, anyhow, to see what it could have been like. And then, of course, the city has changed. They keep adding things, and it just makes it interesting to see how they continually make improvements. And one of the big changes I noticed was in I think it's Yad Vashem, the Holocaust memoriam. They have another room that I had never seen before, because it evidently is new since 6 years ago. That is, it's very dark, and there are lights, little lights flickering all through this, and you kind of walk along and hold on to a rail, because it's very dark in there. And there's constantly a voice that is telling, giving all the names of the children that died in the Holocaust. And all the while you walk slowly through this dark building or large room, you hear these voices of the names of all of these children. It really sobered you, it was very impressionable. And then of course the other section has to do with more information in connection with the Holocaust, but that was quite new and done in very good taste. Now, there were several things that I personally wanted very much to be able to do, and one was to get up to visit Brother Besner, who has been living up in a mountain where they call it Emek HaShalom, which means a valley of peace. And I had tried for some time to get an address. The brother is German, and he's been up there giving a message of some kind that we were interested in, and we wanted to see just what it was all about. And there were a group of four brethren, two of them were very close friends of my friend Bronya, that passed away last December. And they were in touch. There was a Jewish man that came to Poland and invited four of them. He says he could handle four. He would sponsor them to coming to Israel, and they would stay with him, and then they could come to the convention and do whatever. Anyhow, I had sent the address to Sister Lukashevich, and they went up, when they got to Israel, they went up before the convention to Emek HaShalom, and they worked there for 4 days and stayed right on the premises and helped them out a bit. And then they came to the convention. They had a hard time finding us because we were in one hotel or another. Actually, we were divided between two hotels, and sometimes the service was in the Renaissance and sometimes it was in the Sheraton. And the people at the desk didn't always know what was going on. So when they got there, they didn't get my letter that indicated that this was all changed from the earlier program. It was a little bit of a hassle. It was a little bit of a hassle for not only them, but for Brother Besner that came down. They had the same experience. They finally called the Bauschus to find out where this convention is, and also the Jewish brother from Krakow that I've been in touch with for the last year, he also called the Renaissance, and they didn't know anything about anything. Anyhow, those were a couple of the things that I wanted to do, and another one was to try to get in touch or talk to somebody that was connected with the Jewish immigrants, particularly that came from Russia, who did not have the same concept as the Jews for Jesus or the Messianic Jews in this country. The Jews in this country, when they are converted, they are kind of assimilated into the churches, and they're taught about Trinity and hell and have accepted that. But the majority, from what I understood, we did get to see one woman who was visiting at the Bausch's, and I just happened to walk in at the time she was there when I learned who she was, and so forth. I was delighted that we would be able to have a short conversation, and it was very enjoyable. So I'm going to try to go through this briefly because it was very interesting. Brother Besner is a German brother who, according to his own background that he told us, had been a pilgrim in Brother Russell's day in Germany, and he had a twin brother, and the twin brother was taken by the Nazis, and he did not cooperate with them, so they began to operate and do various experiments on him. And after a while, he passed away. He died from all of the things that were done to him. And Brother Besner escaped into Austria, and he began witnessing there to various people. And the mother of Joseph, who lives with Brother Besner and is much younger. Brother Besner is 93, but a very spry 93, and he works very hard. Brother Joseph Schmidt is Czechoslovakian, and his mother got in touch with the truth in Austria when Brother Besner was there. And for some time, when Brother Besner decided that he wanted to come to Israel and witness here to the kingdom, he came, and then he was here for a while, and the government asked him to leave. He went back to Germany or Austria, I guess it was Germany, and he stayed for a while, and then he felt very badly. He felt he really wanted to go back to Israel to continue his work. He had purchased the land, so he went back, and they had like a little court case about it, and the government finally said, oh, he's not doing any harm, he might as well come back. So he did, and then he continued to build all these buildings that he had. I'll go into that more when I get to it. At this time, he was at the convention, and he gave his little resume of his background, and he also had some articles there with him that he showed to the friends. And of course, then the time was up, and after the meeting, Brother Paul Molly said to him, "If next time we have a convention in Jerusalem, we're coming up to your place, and we'll spend a couple of hours and have two talks." And Brother Besner, of course, says, "Yes, you must come." And we had hoped they'd be able to stay around a bit, but they were anxious to get back because they were sure there was a busload of people waiting for them, which there was. So they went off, after that we had a chance to talk with Brother Beloba's nephew. Actually, we couldn't talk too well because he was Russian, and I, of course, didn't know much Russian. I could pick out a few words from the similarity to Polish. So I was wondering how we were going to communicate, but there was a sister, Sister Matysik, Ella Elzbieta from Chicago, is now living in Chicago. It was her mother, and she was there very anxious to talk to him also, and she helped out because she knew some Russian. So we couldn't have too much of a lengthy conversation because of the language barrier, but anyhow, he got across to me the fact that they wanted the Romanian 6 volumes, and I did not have his address. Sister Connie thought that they possibly had moved away and gone to wherever, and it turned out that he said that he had been to Connie several times and she wasn't home. But it was also very difficult for them to communicate because Connie didn't know Russian and they didn't know Hebrew yet very well. But they're in a moshav, and there's two brothers, actually. I did not meet the other one. Two of them were there, one for one meeting or during an intermission, and I didn't learn until later that it was Brother Beloga's two nephews, and they could not stay. They had their duties, and they couldn't understand anyhow. And the one said, well, he was going to be back, and he was. And this is the one that we were able to take a picture of and communicated a little bit. We got across, he got across to me that he wanted 6 volumes, so I, of course, will mail them to him if I can read the address. Actually, I would have mailed it already if I had an address for them, but nobody had the address. So now they're both living in a moshav and working on the, it's something like a kibbutz, but not quite a bit different in that on a moshav you have your own house. And they have quite a little family, about 3 or 4 children. And then there was also his wife's either brother or nephew. So we were glad at least to have that little bit of contact with them. And it will be good if when they get really settled that they might be able to, if they have some common language, to meet with some of the brethren now and then. One of the nice things was that both Brother Stuart and Sister Connie Campbell were able to get to the convention. They came by bus part of the way, and then John picked up and brought him to the convention. And John, of course, is Stuart Livermore's son. And John was about, 13, 14 when they left for Israel. And our daughter, was about 4 years old, and Dan was about 6, so it wasn't really until 6 years ago when we went to Israel that Ruth really got acquainted with John and got to know him. Well, he was able to come and meet at the hotel practically every evening during the convention. He worked in Jerusalem, and he came over, and we had quite a good chance to visit with him, and we met his daughter, who had grown up quite a bit, and we were looking forward to meeting one of the sons, at least, who was in the army. Anyhow, it was so good for Stuart to be there. It was his dream ever since he went to Israel that there be a Jerusalem convention, and he lived to see that realized. And one of the meetings, I saw him sitting in the front, and I wondered, you know, whether he was going to perhaps lead the music, the singing, because he did so well in the States when he was here. He always had a big smile on his face and very, very upbeat. And sure enough, he was leading the music, and it was just a sight. It brought tears to my eyes, made me realize how much we had missed him through the years. And so that was a nice experience. One of the other things, Michael's brother came along. In fact, there were quite a few of the family that wanted to see Stuart again. Ruth Burns was there, and Michael's brother, who was not in the truth, but he stayed at the convention. He stayed with Stuart the whole time. It was kind of interesting because he never really had any interest in the truth at all. And when we talked about the Jerusalem convention, he wanted to come to Jerusalem to see Stuart and John and their family, and he said, I'm not going to sit at the convention. I said, well, you can wander around Jerusalem. But he sat in all of the talks, sat with Stuart, and he's a very outgoing and friendly person, so he made a lot of friends, and I think some of the friends thought he was a Bible student. But he did gain a great deal, and he said he was going to go home and read over all the talks and see what he could pick up. So it was kind of nice. And then when the convention ended, we, of course, left the group, and we were on our own. And we had this minivan. Actually, it wasn't too mini. It was quite a nice-sized van, very comfortable, and it seated 11 or 12. But, of course, the back seat was loaded with our suitcases and so forth. So it worked out very well. We were able to take Stuart home. We couldn't go straight home from Jerusalem to Arad because we had to go around the West Bank. It's a little more dangerous now than it had been. And Connie had to leave early because she had to start work on Sunday, which would be like our Monday. But we went to Arad, and on the way we stopped at a place, and it happened to be right on the edge. This was down south, of course, and it was close to the Egyptian border, and there was a lot of battles, and they had a large field there, and they had all kinds of little figures that were put in this field, depicting the soldiers and how they fought and how they protected the kibbutz that they had there. Actually, they lost 30-some men, while the Egyptians had a tremendous loss of hundreds. So we could see the Lord's hand in all of the affairs of Israel as they struggled to become a nation. And it was kind of interesting, too. They had a little recording there telling the experiences and how little ammunition they had and how much was accomplished against their such odds of hundreds of men that were fighting against them. Anyhow, then we continued on, and we got to Arad, and we went to Connie's. We stayed there overnight, and then said our goodbyes to Stuart, and Frank Katerba stayed with him that week, and he was going to join us when we went home. So then we went on. We went back up where we came from pretty much and a lot further, because we went up to the Bauches, to the Galilee, and we stayed there several nights. We were able to accomplish several things there. We, of course, enjoyed being there, enjoyed their company, and they went with us to the couple of places that we wanted to go to visit the brethren. And while we were there, a woman came and was sitting in their living room, and I walked in the door, and I wondered who she was, and it turned out that she was a lady from Finland. She was a Gentile, but she married a Jewish rabbi, And he was a messianic rabbi. In other words, he believed Jesus was the Messiah and so forth. And so this is what I really had wanted to talk to somebody about, and this was a perfect opportunity. So we asked her quite a few questions, and asked about the difference between the Messianic Jews that believed in Trinity and hell and those that didn't. And she mentioned that there were seven different kinds of these groups in Israel, and four times a year they got together like we would at a convention. And so I wondered if she knew what proportion there would be of those that believed the Trinity in hell and those that didn't. And she said that it was the minority that may have had those views. But when they get together, they never talk about them. And evidently they have not made an issue of it like they would in the States. Most of the Jews here join a church, and then they take in all of the doctrines that they have that we would not agree with in any way. Anyhow, it was interesting to realize that they got together, and the government hasn't created any problem as to their understanding, which is quite different than the Orthodox Jew, of course. So that was very interesting to learn how this actually was taking place in Israel. And this is an ongoing thing. And she was very interesting. She was kind of remarkable for a Gentile to marry a Jew that, of course, was converted, so that made it very nice. And the insights she gave us were very, very helpful. And it gave me a little better insight. You don't really get to talk to anybody outside of the group when you're with a group. And this is one of the reasons why we kind of went on our own, because there are certain things we wanted to do. And the Bausches were in the States, and we kind of talked about this when they were there, about going up to visit Brother Besner, because they had gone up there the first time they went was last summer, I believe, and they would go up whenever they could. And so we took the van with the Bausches and with Mitchell, Becky, Mark, myself, and Peter and Margaret came along. We all went up to Besner's in one car, and we were grateful that they were able to come along, because it was very difficult to find. It was up a mountain. There were no signs, no directions at all, but they had already been there, so it made it a lot easier. When we got up to seemingly the top of the mountain, there was like a valley there, and then I could understand why it was called HaShalom, which means the Valley of Peace. Anyhow, it was a very lovely area. The walkways were very neatly done, and they were lined with the rocks and stones that are all over the hills of Israel, and it made lovely pathways. And they had this one house that had like a breezeway in between, and it was all enclosed in glass, and it would make a nice eating area. And on one side was their apartment, and on the other side they had room for brethren to stay, and I guess the four brethren did stay there. And that was just one room. And then they had not room but building, and then they had other buildings. They had a large building that they were renting, but the people didn't work out, and they were trying to really get them out, and that was quite a distance away. Then there was another house. We didn't even get into them. We didn't have time to really see it all. But then we went on to another area where there was an octagon building. It was all glass on the sides, and the chairs were in order, in rows, and then along the whole back, except where the podium was, there was like a wooden bench that was built right in, which seated even more. So the whole little place would seat about 100, and it was really very nice. And then right near it was a rectangular shaped building, and that also had windows all around, and it was all equipped with these picnic tables and the chairs, how they go together. There was a whole room for them. This is like a cafeteria style, and then in the back there was a small place to work, to prepare food and so forth. And I had wondered how often they even used this. It looked so clean and neat, like nobody had been there for a while. But they do have large groups that come. In fact, there was one coming down, they had already stopped on this mountainous area, and we wondered whether they had been up there, and sure enough, when we got up there, they told us there had been a group that had just left a short time before. So there we were. We listened to his background some more, and the work that he felt he was doing, and Brother Joseph Schmidt, the one that had translated for us, he feels, he didn't say it, but later on when he made a phone call, he has felt that Brother Besner could be like another Elijah voice calling in the wilderness. And you could see the similarity. He is a voice crying in Israel, and they all seem to know him and respect him. And because of his age and white hair, he's like a grandfather figure. And so he has had a lot of exposure in the Jerusalem Post, and the people just come there all the time. They just know about the area. Bible students were the last to know, really, a little more about him. So we're glad that the contact was made and that we had that opportunity to go there and have a visit with him. Then later on, Brother Joseph called the Bausches. We had already left, and gave some more interesting information. They were very pleased that we were up there, and they are hoping that they could have more contact with the brethren as the years go by. Of course, at 93, you don't really know how long he's going to have the opportunity of continuing to serve in this capacity, but then that's up to the Lord. Again, he kind of went over the fact that he had been a Bible student in Germany, and at 20 he was asked to serve as a pilgrim, serve the brethren in Germany, and in 1928 he had the opportunity to meet in the House of Commons in Berlin. And he was brought up in connection with the Nazi movement, and his twin brother, of course, was caught, imprisoned, and then he died as a result of all the operations they did on him. And he later on, then, brother escaped. I believe I mentioned this. He escaped to Austria, and he continued his evangelization. He evidently is a natural for giving the message of truth to people. And he wanted to help Israel. And he feels that they will be the first people that will be blessed in the kingdom. He bought land in 1962, and then he started this, what he calls a kibbutz, of all these various buildings there. Besides the articles in the Jerusalem Post in connection with his work, there were four TV programs also that announced this. He announced also the coming of the Messiah. They say that they have about 10,000 visitors that come every year, and this is known by the government, and the government encourages this. They don't discourage it in any way. His hope is, of course, that the brethren would be able to band together, and that he may have more direct communication with the brethren in Israel. The mayor and others seem to feel that they would get a message from Brother Besner, a message that they wouldn't get from other rabbis. So they really encourage them to do what they can. They even put in quite a nice write-up about Emek HaShalom in one of the color magazines that advertised different sites in Israel. They showed us a copy of it, and it was really a lovely layout. He mentioned that the first coming of our Lord was as a life, let's see. Oh, the first coming of Jesus' life was to give a sacrifice, and the second coming as King of Kings is to establish the kingdom of heaven. Anyhow, it was very nice to be able to get a bird's eye view as to what this brother has been doing for a little over 30 years, rather one single-handed with the help of one other brother, Joseph, of course, who also has the truth, is very supportive, and in the past, his mother did the cooking there and the cleaning. So when she passed away, of course, they've had to do this all on their own. And it's quite a big job to maintain this area. And he's been a voice crying in the wilderness and giving a message through all these years, at least in connection with the hope of the kingdom. And he's had quite an opportunity, more than probably anybody else, because this is a daily thing. There is not one day that passes where there isn't a busload that comes to hear the message. And it's really been quite an opportunity, and no doubt the Lord will bless it to the extent that it's in harmony with his program. And it was a pleasure to be there. We were very grateful. And then we made our way back to this was like a day's journey practically to get there and to come back. And so then we got ready for the For these few days, we were staying in the Galilee area with the Bausches at the YMCA where they operate, the YMCA there that is very beautifully situated right on the shores of Galilee. And it's a very lovely area, and there are quite a few buildings, and there's a chapel there, and they have a restaurant and a crew that operates the restaurant, and they have a gardener, and he's doing a wonderful job in maintaining the beauty of the area. And it's a very peaceful place to be away from the hubbub of the world and its cares. So it was really very nice setting. And the one morning there were some friends that from California and Chicago that wanted to plant trees in memory of some of their family that had passed away. So Mitchell offered to take them in the minivan, so I went along too to plant a few trees. And it was a nice experience to do this. And across the road, the man who was running the place told us that all it looked like a forest there, all these huge trees that were thick and looked like a regular forest. And he said that 30 years ago these little trees, or these big trees, had been planted as small saplings, and now they're well grown and established. And he said, in time, this side, this is on the other side of the road. Now he was on this side of the road, and he's starting all over again to have these little trees planted. He's in charge of the whole operation. So it was nice. The holes were already made, so all we had to do was pick a little plant and put it in and shovel the dirt over it and put a few rocks on, and it was through. So it was nice to have that experience. I've heard so much about tree planting in Israel, not realizing I would have the opportunity to do some of it myself. Now, the next day, we were going to set out, of course, to visit this Jewish-Polish brother who had been in Poland previously, because he had now been in Israel almost 4 years. So before that point, he had been in Poland. He wound up in Israel, and he got an address from somebody about the Campbells, and got to them last spring when Jack was still alive. And he got in touch with them, and they kept in touch all the while, and he was very, very sorry and disappointed when Jack passed away. And he had gone up to Brother Besner's to try out for about a month, but it just wasn't the right thing for him to do, evidently. So he went back to his old job, and what it was is very interesting. He's a very interesting young man. After he had come to Israel, and after he had finally contacted the Campbells, they gave me his address and thought maybe if there was some literature that he might be able to make use of it. So I mailed him whatever volumes we had in Polish. It wasn't a complete set. I think one were missing, but he had all five, the other five. And he was very grateful for them, and he seemed to grasp the truth very well. In fact, he was doing a lot of witnessing of his own, and he was taking care of an elderly man. He was a former doctor who had had several strokes and really just couldn't take care of himself. He was like a vegetable. And so we went, we found the house. We called him up first to make sure he was going to be home. Of course, he was delighted that we were coming, and so we made our way. It was another day's journey, really. It took practically most of the day to go up there and come back, and we got there, and he wasn't home, but he called in right away saying he was at the post office and he was coming right over. He lives with this man and his wife, who is a lovely person. Her name was Miriam. And when Eliezer first came there and started to work, she really had no faith, no hope, no anything, had no Jewishness about her. But after he was there a while, she got the truth. And now she's enjoying the hope of the kingdom and so forth. And it was such a nice experience, because Eliezer is a very outgoing person, always smiling and very energetic. He's also an artist, and the lady there had some beautiful pictures on her wall that looked like paintings. When you got close, you realized they were this, what do you call it, this stitching that you do, and they were just beautiful. And Eliezer really won their hearts. She treats him like a mother. His own mother died when he was born, so he never knew her. And Miriam just loves him. She said, "I just love him. He is such a help." And while he was gone for a month up at helping out Brother Besner, she had to hire somebody else. And she said, "There's nobody like Eliezer to take care of her husband." So she was glad to have him back. And they have been very helpful, because in Israel, if you are in Israel as a Jew and you come there, the government will subsidize, and not only subsidize, but pay outright 50% for an apartment that you buy. And his 4 years are soon to be up, so he was negotiating to see if he could get one of these apartments, and then he'd have an apartment in Israel, continue his work there, but he would be on his own. And so Miriam's son came while we were there, and he was trying to help him with some of the paperwork that was in English, in which language he didn't know. So I was able to talk to him in Polish, and the others kind of listened and translated whenever we could. And then Miriam, of course, was there and did a lot of the talking. So it was really a very nice experience. He showed me his library, and I saw all the volumes that we sent to him. And he told me he read the first volume twice, and he's read all of the others, and he's got just one more that he had his marker in. So he really has been very, very appreciative of the message of truth. Now, he had gone to a yeshiva for a while after leaving Besner's, because he wanted to learn more Hebrew, and that's the easiest way to learn it. And then he came back up and resumed his work with Miriam and her husband and so forth. So he has not been standing still for a minute. He's one of these very energetic young men. He must be in his early 30s, I would say. And he had his little yarmulke on, and he still goes to the synagogue, or whatever they have up there. And he does a lot of witnessing among the Jews. And they're very open. They're very open to hear his message. It's really uncanny, because there wasn't that much freedom a few years ago. It was more a closed case. But now he probably can do more good where he is, rather than up at Brother Besner's, where he, you know, could help with the manual work, but he really didn't have this opportunity to actually witness to so many people in the either the congregation or the synagogue itself. So it's kind of an interesting thing to see how this has developed, how at the end of the age we know that there will be a slowing down of the high calling, and who knows what the Lord has in store for many of these who are so eager to share the truth with others. It was very refreshing to see his zeal and his interest and what he's able to do. And he took the divine plan chart, and he made other kinds of charts, all kinds of them, with various unusual pictures. I couldn't hardly understand it. He was explaining it to me little by little, but I didn't retain it. But he claims that it is exactly what the Hebrew or the Jewish mind is able to comprehend and accept in connection with the divine plan. And all I can do is take his word for it, because it was beyond me to understand. But it showed how busy he was in trying to understand the various features of the plan and share it with others. So that was very rewarding. From there, we went to the hotel. We learned that the group of the second week, the whole group wound up in one hotel in Naharaya. I think that's how you say it, Naharaya, where we were, and this is where Eliezer was. And it was so unusual that when we were on the Galilee, the group was in the Galilee. And when we were up there, they, sure enough, they moved up there too. We didn't even realize that this was so. But the Baushes wanted very much to meet the two Grudgens that were, well, not two, but two families of Grudgens from Australia. they didn't get a chance to catch up with them in the Galilee because they were spread out in three or four hotels there, and it was difficult to track them down. So here we went to the hotel, and Eliezer went right in to where they were eating and was making, and I wanted him to meet Andrzej Dombek, because he also was from Krakow. And lo and behold, at one of the first tables that we went to, there was a sister, the sister who cooks for the brethren that are working on the retirement center for the last few years. And they recognized Eliezer, and they all said, "Where have you been for 4 years?" He evidently had worked on the retirement center, and he suddenly didn't show up, and they didn't know what happened to him. And so he told them a little about themselves, and he was so happy to see these brethren, and of course they were very happy to see him, that he invited them all to go back to his place and meet Miriam and the whole bit. And of course we stayed behind because they wanted to see some of the friends, and then we were going to go on home. And he needed to go back anyhow to take care of this Miriam's husband, who does every evening, puts him to bed and whatever the ritual is. And so we wondered how they made out, because he, you know, it takes a certain kind of a person to even have the nerve to bring home a whole bunch of people in a place that isn't even yours. And evidently she's so open in connection with him and everything he does, that it just works out. Of course, we didn't hang around to see what happened, because it was already getting late, and the Bausches had the opportunity to see the brethren that they missed when they were not able to get to the convention. So it was a very nice experience for all of them. And it's also a blessing to realize how the Lord can care for his own no matter where they are. And I was counting out with Brother Beloga's two nephews and their wives, not even counting the children, and the two Bausches, and Brother Besner, and the other brother Joseph with him, and then Connie and Stuart. There are 10 brethren now in Israel that we know of that have contact, and Sister Connie is very grateful because after Jack died, she had to find some employment, and she's working now. They just so worked out that they were opening up a new department for, and this is for students that come and want to start out to learn a little Hebrew and to see how they would like the land and so forth. And they practically made this department for her and put her in charge. And she would be a natural, because she's able to have an opportunity to witness to all these young people that come through. And she just loves the job, and it's part-time. And now she's very happy. This is a grandmother again, and Maya, her daughter, had a little baby boy, and so she's not right in the area. They're a little distance away, but she does get to see them at least once in a while, and she's happy about that. Most of her children are there. There's one son in the States, maybe two. They have 6 children. And they got a pretty good bird's-eye view of what the truth movement was about. And her children are all there, and she knew that Jack had a very bad heart. So they made the move to Israel so that she would be with her family. And after we left the Galilee, we visited some of Mitchell and Becky's old friends that they had made acquaintance with, and they lived in Israel for 1 year some time ago, and it was down in Ashkelon, and he happened to be in the building program, and he took us all around where they were building for the new immigrants coming from Russia, and there were many, many apartments, and they were very nice. They looked lovely, and there's no restriction as to what color you need to have your homes in any other a part of Israel except Jerusalem. So he drove us through the old Arab section. All of the Arabs just fled when the war land was taken over by the Israelis. And so it was quite remarkable. These buildings were large and beautiful apartment buildings. They're really lovely. And then some of them that were finished had this lovely landscaping all around. And so that was a good experience to see the contrast. He took us through the Arab section where all the houses now are boarded up, and it was a very poor section. And it was such a comparison with the Israeli section where they're building up, and they've got all kinds of furniture and everything you can think of. While these people during their Sabbath, now the man claimed he was not religious. He wasn't sure of too much, but the Jews there, they generally, whether they're religious or not, they always take in the various holidays and the Sabbath, and this happened to be the Sabbath, and on Sabbath everything is closed. You just don't even think of going to the stores because nothing is open. Everything almost stands still. But of course you can drive. They don't stop you. But of course in the Jewish section of the of Jerusalem, they would not like you to even come into their area. If you're interesting though, that they did light some candles. They were not on the table. They were up on a higher buffet like, but they did light candles, and that's the part of the ritual. So we had a nice visit with these people. Got a little insight about the unreligious Jews, or those that keep the various holidays with the rest of the nation. And it shows that they have some faith. And it'll be interesting in the time of Jacob's trouble just how this will wind up, and only the Lord knows. Then in the morning we went back to Jerusalem, and there was another friend that they wanted to see that was very close to faith, Mitchell and Becky's daughter. So we visited up there, and they had a lovely apartment, and they were going to be moving pretty soon to another apartment where they say they had a better view. It means a lot to them to have a good view. I imagine, you know, if you're in an apartment a lot, you would like a good view. I never even think of looking out the window, you know, or worrying about a view, but it means a lot to some people, and it did to them. We went back to the old city, and we stayed in the old city, and it's called, it was the church, Christ Church, I believe. I had been there 6 years ago. It's very clean and neat. You know, they don't bother with having any TVs in the room or anything, and it's a lot more reasonable. So we stayed there overnight, and then we had to get up and have breakfast in the same place and get over to Jerusalem to take the car back to the rental place. And it was just bumper-to-bumper traffic. It just reminded me of New York City, where there are so many cars mulling around. Eventually, we got there, and we got to the airport, and John picked us up and took us to his place. And I thought that was very nice that he was willing to do that. He was off from work, or he took off, and his daughter was there because there was a teacher strike. And so then Guy, the younger boy, who is 21 or 2, something like that, but he looks younger, he was in the Army, and he had only a half hour more, and we got there in time to be able to meet him and have a few words with him. He's a very nice boy. He's got reddish hair, and he's in the Army. Everybody has to do their stint, and he'll be out maybe late next fall. But he turned out to be such a nice young man. And he had a friend with him also that was ready to go back for wherever they needed to go. There was one, as we picked up different soldiers, we were able to talk with them, and one of them, I asked one of them a question, and I asked where they were fighting, or where they were trying to keep the peace, and he said it's a secret, he couldn't tell. So they got these soldiers all over Israel looking for a ride or trying to hook a ride, as they say, anything just to get home for the weekend. And so he was there with us for about a half hour, and then he had to leave to go back with his buddy. So it was nice that he could even stay for a while, that he had the interest to even want to stay. We went back to the airport and got on. We had a little problem with our tickets, but it was able to be solved, and we got back in the New York airport. After 2 a.m. in the morning, we got home about 3:30. So we had a very enjoyable time. I was really grateful for the opportunities we had to talk with some of the people and to get some insights as to just how they were progressing. We can't really expect the whole nation to recognize Christ. It's not for everybody. But for those that can and for those that have, I'm sure it will prove to be a great blessing. And even in the time of trouble, the Lord will be able to shield those who are His. And so we are very grateful for this experience. And if I think of anything I missed, I'll put a P.S. on. Otherwise, I will close now. God be with you. This is a P.S. I think I forgot to mention one thing. When we were up at Brother Besner's, he mentioned that the mayor of the town there that oversees this area where he is, was, of course, is very pleased with his work. Brother Besner has gotten quite a bit of exposure in the Jerusalem Post and even in the brochure we saw that was giving various sites in Israel, one of them was going up to Brother Besner's place. And what they would like him to do, they would like him to build more buildings in order to house some of the leaders of these groups that come so that they could learn the message that Brother Besner is giving in connection with the kingdom here and the blessing of Israel, and that then they could help to spread this word with the young people that often are brought up there. Usually they're either army personnel, or we noticed from the pictures that there were many groups of young people. Now, of course, Brother Besner doesn't have any money left, and he, of course, would love it if the brethren would be able to support this. But of course, we can't be sure just how this would work and whether it would work. Since he has some buildings there, it would seem like they could give it a try with a few at a time to see if it would be a workable thing. So I really don't know how this is going to work and whether any of the brethren would even be interested in doing this. And of course, the government is always looking for others to come in and help build up Israel. And this may be part of the deal. We really can't be sure. But it's a good thought, and it's hard to understand that these leaders would be that amenable to doing this. Anyhow, we'd have to leave this in the Lord's care, and it was one of the things they mentioned. And of course, the brethren are not particularly united on any point, and I doubt whether they would be united on this. So it would have to be something that the Lord would overrule and if he sees fit. I think that's about all that I may have missed. So I'll say again, God bless.